Still on standby, Grave reported, leaning over one of the consoles.
Duty barracks over here,
Brightwater said, looking into one of the side rooms.
Beds don't look slept in, though. The reprisal must have taken them by surprise.
Sloppy,
Grave said.
They're pirates,
Brightwater reminded him.
What exactly are we looking for?
Han asked, stepping to one of the other doorways and looking inside. This one was a small armory, with racks of blasters and grenades standing ready for whenever an enemy got tired of aerial bombardment and decided to get a little more personal.
Let's start by finding out who the last person was they were talking to,
Marcross said, crossing to the comm panel.
Good idea,
Han said, looking around. The others were gathering around Marcross, their backs to him and Luke. He caught Luke's eye, nodded over his shoulder at the armory, then wandered over toward the group surrounding Marcross. Luke looked puzzled, but nodded back and started edging his way toward the armory.
Find anything?
Han asked as he came up behind Lerone.
We have their last communication set up,
Lerone said, gazing over Marcross's shoulder. His voice sounded odd through the stormtrooper helmet.
Well?
Han asked, craning his neck to see.
None of your business,
Marcross said, shutting off the display with a quick twitch of his finger. But not before Han had caught the name of the system. It was Shelkanwa, Shelsha Sector's capital, the same place where Luke had said Leia was trapped.
So we're going to Shelkanwa?
He asked as casually as he could.
We're going to Shelkanwa,
Marcross said, his voice stiff.
You're going wherever you want, in your own ship. You can leave as soon as it's back,
Lerone added.
Again, thanks for your assistance back there.
No problem, Han said.
And with a rush of tangled emotions, he suddenly realized that that was it. If Luke was right about Leia being trapped on Shelkanwa, there was absolutely nothing he and Chewie and the kid could do about it. The Imperials would have the whole planet interdicted by now, and there was no way the Falcon could run that kind of blockade. Not every Imperial was as stupid and gullible as Captain Ozzel. Leia was on her own. But that was all right. She was smart and resourceful, and she had Chivkairi and his buddies on the ground, and Mon Mothma and Ryken and their friends on the outside. They'd get her away from Shelkanwa somehow, and then they'd bundle her off to some new hiding place halfway across the galaxy, where Han would probably never see her again. And once Leia was out of the picture, his last reason for sticking around this crazy rebellion would be gone. He was free. Free to drop Luke back with his new friends, free to go square things with Jabba, free to get back to the simpler life he'd had before his meeting with Luke and old Kenobi at that Mos Eisley cantina. There would be no one chasing him, no one expecting him to do anything, no one giving orders except himself. It was over. If he really wanted it to be. He looked back around as Luke sidled out of the armory, wearing a studious casual expression and gripping a blaster pressed into concealment at the side of his leg. Han sighed. No, it wasn't over. Not yet. Luke and Leia were his friends. And even if he wasn't ready to swear loyalty to Ryken and this whole rebellion thing, he still couldn't walk out on his friends.
Actually, we were thinking about going to Shelkanwa too, he told Lerone. I don't see any reason why we can't ride together.
I can think of a dozen of them,
Marcross retorted, turning around. His blaster settled down, not quite pointing in Han's direction.
What's so urgent on Shelkanwa? And why can't you get there in your own ship?
Lerone added. There was nothing to do but tell them. Anyway, if it was going to be a problem, it would be better to have it out right here and now, instead of on their way to Makran City.
We have a friend there who's in a little trouble, he said. Actually, it's more than a little trouble. I figure that by now the whole planet's probably been locked down.
The sector capital is locked down?
Brightwater echoed.
What did your friend do? Rob the governor's palace?
At the moment, she hasn't done much of anything, Han said, hoping it was more or less true. The point is that you're military. You might be able to get in through that. We can't.
For a long moment, the room was silent. Then Lerone stirred.
So that's it,
he said, as if some long-standing question had just been answered.
You're rebels.
Actually, we're only loosely connected with them, Han corrected.
So you're only partial traitors?
Grave asked acidly.
Well, you're deserters,
Luke pointed out. It was very much the wrong thing to say. All four stormtroopers stiffened, and Han had no trouble imagining what their expressions were like behind those faceplates.
You call us that again, boy,
Grave said, his voice like crushed ice.
And you better be ready to use that blaster.
Put it down, Luke,
Han ordered. Would the kid never learn when to keep his mouth shut?
Anyway, that doesn't matter.
Yes, it matters,
Lerone retorted, as Luke silently set his borrowed blaster down on the nearest console.
No matter what our current situation is, we're still soldiers of the Empire.
And we swore an oath to defend it against people like you.
Yeah, I know the oath you swore,
Han said, standing a little straighter himself.
I swore it too once.
Lerone's half-aimed blaster seemed to waver a little.
You were in the military?
Caradan Academy,
Han said, bittersweet memories flooding back.
Graduated with honor. Had a career ahead of me, they said.
What happened?
Lerone asked. Han grimaced.
I saw how the Empire treated people, he said. Especially non-humans.
This time, all four blasters definitely wavered.
So did we,
Grave muttered.
When did you leave?
Brightwater asked.
I didn't leave, Han said. I tried to help. My superiors didn't like that, and they threw me out. End of story.
There was another pause. From their stances, Han had the odd feeling this was a discussion they'd already had.
You rebels are trying to tear down order and stability,
Lerone said at last.
Everything we've worked so hard to build since the Clone Wars.
We have no problem with order and stability, Han assured him. No one wants to destroy that. We just want to tear down the parts that are bad.
Why can't they be fixed from the inside?
Brightwater countered.
Because the people running things don't want them fixed.
Han gestured toward the ceiling.
My partner Chewie was an Imperial slave. A lot of his people still are. You think the governors and moffs and admirals want that changed?
Maybe the Wookiees are the lucky ones,
Grave murmured.
You want to tell Chewie that?
No, of course not,
Grave said.
I was just pointing out it could be worse. Has been worse sometimes.
There was an operation on Teardrop just before we parted company with the reprisal,
Brightwater said, the words coming out with obvious difficulty.
Part of the reason we left, actually. It was a raid on a suspected rebel cell in a small town in the hills.
Han looked at Luke. Teardrop? Wasn't that the place where they'd barely skated out from both a pirate gang and a Star Destroyer?
The rebels were all gone, he told the stormtroopers, before you ever got there.
The air was suddenly tense again.
You know this for sure?
Lerone asked, his tone that of a man not sure he really wanted the answer.
Very sure, Han said. Me and Luke had just pulled the last batch out when your ship showed up.
Did something bad happen? Luke asked carefully.
Lerone turned away.
There were... We were ordered to kill them. All of them. Everyone in town,
Grave said. He hesitated.
Starting with the aliens.
Oh, no, Luke breathed. But you didn't. did you?
Lerone didn't answer. Han glanced at Luke, his stomach tightening. Though, after Alderaan, what did he expect? What did any of them expect?
And you really think this kind of thing can be fixed from the inside?
We're not here to fix the galaxy, Solo,
Greave said.
We're just soldiers.
Not even sure we're that anymore,
Brightwater muttered.
I'm not here to fix the galaxy either,
Han assured them, choosing his words carefully. He had a pretty good read on these men now, and the best way to sell them on this would be to echo their own feelings and motives straight back at them.
I just want to fix a corner of it here and there.
He waved out toward the stars.
Rescuing our friend is one of those corners.
Our oath of allegiance was to the Emperor.
Maybe, Han said. But if you ask me, a soldier's real job is to protect the people.
We don't need you to tell us where our duty lies,
Marcross said quietly. It was, Han noted with interest, the first comment he'd made since the conversation had turned in this direction.
And we're wasting time.
You're right, Han agreed. So what's it to be?
Han's comlink clicked.
Lerone, he's here,
Quiller called.
The Falcon. Looks okay to me. You about finished?
Han looked at Lerone, wishing he could see the man's face.
It's up to you,
he said. Lerone looked at each of the others in turn. Then almost reluctantly, he turned back to Han.
Quiller, tell the Wookiee we're taking him and his friends to Shel Kahnwa. Tell him to hide his ship somewhere in case the reprisal comes back. When he's done that, have him give you the coordinates and we'll come get him.
Or else Luke and I come with you, and Chewie takes the Falcon to Shel Kahnwa on his own,
Han suggested.
We can meet at some nice quiet rendezvous point in the system, and he can come aboard then.
I guess that'll work,
Lerone said.
Quiller?
I'll let him know,
Quiller said.
You find everything you need?
Lerone looked at Marcross.
Yes,
Marcross said quietly.
Everything. We'll be back at the pad in 10 minutes.
Lerone turned back to Han.
We'll take you to Shel Kahnwa. But once we're there, you're on your own. If we can manage to meet up again, we'll give you a ride back out to wherever you leave the Falcon. But that's all we'll do for you and your rebel friend. Understood?
Understood, Han said.
And you can leave that blaster where it is,
he added to Luke.
We have better ones aboard the Sawantek.
Turning, he headed for the exit.
Sure,
Luke said, throwing Han a look of strained patience. Han shrugged back.
You heard the man,
he said.
Let's go.
The tunnel's exit was 10 kilometers farther on, a camouflaged cave north of the base. As Mara lifted the ship above the intervening hills, she could see that the incoming freighter had arrived and had landed on Pad 8, the Happer's Way's former home. For a moment she considered swinging back around and hitting them while they were vulnerable on the ground. But no, she had no real evidence that they were connected to the attack. And anyway, she had no time to spare. Keying the nav computer for the nearest system with decent medical facilities, she headed out. An hour later, she dropped the ship back out of hyperspace to carry out Tanis's last request. The Emperor had little patience with memorials, Mara knew, with extra contempt for the practice of saying words over the fallen. Mara said a few words anyway, half-remembered ones from her childhood, before consigning Tanis' body to the emptiness of space. When she again seated herself at the freighter's helm, it was with a dark and icy anger in her soul. TIE fighters and turbolaser fire together added up to a Star Destroyer. And according to Captain Norello, the only one in the sector was the Reprisal. Captain Ozzel almost certainly wasn't in league with the Bloodscars directly. The man was ambitious and pompous, but it required a special kind of daring to take that sort of risk. And Ozzel simply didn't have it. Colonel Somerville had both the daring and the utter lack of ethics, but even a senior ISB officer couldn't order a Star Destroyer captain into combat this way. In fact, aside from a few special cases like Mara herself, the only person outside the fleet chain of command who could do that was the sector governor himself. And as she'd seen in the bunker, the Commodore's final action had been to call someone in the sector capital. With a final look at the wrapped body drifting through the void, Mara turned the ship toward Shalkanwa. Governor Chord had sent the reprisal to destroy the blood scars and cover his tracks. He was a traitor to the Empire. And Mara was going to take him down. Chapter 18. Leia had fully expected to find Governor Chord's troops already surrounding their hotel by the time she and Chip Kyrie arrived. But the hotel and grounds looked just the way they'd left them an hour and a half earlier. Nevertheless, Chip Kyrie insisted on entering alone to retrieve their belongings, directing Leia to a tap cafe across the street that catered to off-world personnel. Leia went in, ordered a small drink just for show, and found a table by a window where she could watch. It seemed like forever before Chip Kyrie finally emerged from the hotel. Her carry bags looped casually over his shoulders. He looked around, then crossed the street toward her. Dropping some credits on the table, Leia went outside to meet him.
"What took you so long?"
she asked as she took the bags.
"I thought it would be wise to make a few comlink calls,"
Chief Kyrie said, gesturing her down the street away from the hotel.
"Forgive the impertinence, but that doesn't sound all that wise to me," Leia pointed out. "You could have been tracked and caught."
"If so, better there than in your presence,"
Chief Kyrie said.
"At any rate, I believe we may have at least a little breathing space. While the ports have been closed to all female humans of your description, my friends tell me there are no reports of wide-scale patroller activity, at least not in the first-tier areas where any search would naturally begin."
"Or else Chord is smart enough to assume we'll avoid those places."
"Hardly,"
Chief Kyrie said calmly.
"There is a large population of Adarians in Makran City and the surrounding area. Governor Chord is quite familiar with our strengths and weaknesses and the way of thinking. Furthermore, Chief Administrator Disra unfortunately knows me all too well. He knows that I could not permit a guest to stay in quarters below her own proper tier."
"Yet you did so,"
Leia pointed out. Chief Kyrie ducked his head.
"No,"
he said, sounding embarrassed.
"I allowed you to check into that hotel, but I never intended for you to actually stay there. I planned to send my servants to pick up your belongings after our meeting and move them to my home."
Leia grimaced. They were indeed an inflexible people.
"So where are we going now?"
"Do not worry, Princess Leia,"
Chief Kyrie said, his voice grim but steady.
"My tier status will no longer be a problem for us, nor will it cloud my thinking and dictate my actions."
He seemed to brace himself.
"For you see, my actions have betrayed my guest. I have no choice but to renounce my name, my home, and my tier status."
Leia stared at him in surprise. For an Adarian to do such a thing was the societal equivalent of cutting off his arm. Did he really understand that? She opened her mouth to ask, and had the grace to shut it again. Of course he understood. By joining the rebellion, he had tacitly stated he was willing to give his life for freedom. Now he had placed his social standing on the line as well. For an Adarian, that was a far harder decision to make.
"Thank you,"
Leia murmured.
What now?
Now,
Chivkairi said, lengthening his stride.
We find a way to use the brief time we have been given.
Leia picked up her own pace to keep up. Inflexible these people might be, but they were also honorable and brave. It was, she decided, a fair trade. They walked 3 blocks, then got onto one of the public air transports, heading northwest toward the main spaceport. They got off 6 blocks later, and switched to a transport headed south toward the main interstellar financial district, and the third-tier residential areas around it. At the edge of the district, they again switched transports, this one heading east toward where Makran City ended abruptly at a line of craggy cliffs dotted with dark caves.
The catacombs,
Chivkairi said, pointing at the distant holes visible between the buildings and occasional trees as they walked down a stained walkway.
Over the centuries, they have housed the criminals and the exiled, the bringers of war and the bringers of plague. At this time in our history, they have become home to the destitute of many species. Peoples who come to Shalkanwa looking for a better life, but failed to achieve it.
Leia wrinkled her nose and was immediately ashamed of her reaction. It sounded grim, but no worse than some of the other places she'd found herself in over the years. If Chivkairi could lower himself to mixing with his society's lowest tier, she could certainly do so. Besides, the caves could hardly smell any worse than the aromas assaulting her from the packed rows of buildings lining the narrow street.
Sounds like a good place to hide out for a while, she said.
It is an ideal place,
Chivkairi agreed.
Which is why we are not going there. The caves will be one of the first areas Governor Chord orders searched when he realizes we are not in any of the city's first-tier locations. We will, however, take some of your personal items there later, the better to confuse our pursuers.
Good idea, Leia said. If we're not going to the catacombs, where are we going?
Abruptly, Chivkairi stopped.
Here,
he said, pointing to the building beside her. Leia looked. They were standing by a small tap calf, squeezed in between 2 second-hand stores, with a faded sign over the door in Adarese, and a 4-language menu in the tinted window.
Here?
She echoed.
It is sometimes wisest to hide the prize in plain sight, is it not?
Chivkairi said. He was trying to be decorous, Leia knew, but it was abundantly clear that he was quietly pleased with himself.
I have thus obtained for you a job.
For one of the very few times in her life, Leia found herself at a complete loss for words.
Oh,
she said, just to say something.
I searched the employment ads myself, to eliminate any chance that it could be traced to a servant or friend.
Chivkairi went on.
You can begin immediately.
Thank you,
Leia said, again, mostly to say something. The tap calf, she noted uneasily, seemed to be the source of the majority of the neighborhood's objectionable odors.
What exactly will I be doing?
Serving at the tables, of course,
Chivkairi frowned.
Unless you would prefer to cook.
Serving's fine,
Leia assured him.
I don't actually know any Adarian recipes.
The Tapkav also serves mungras and other species,
Chivkairi said.
Perhaps later you will be asked to cook for some of them. But we will stay with serving for now. Come, the workers' entrance is around the block and through the back. The manager, Vikriya, is expecting you.
Vikriya turned out to be a lanky female mungra, with dark red accents and an otherwise tawny mane.
This position requires the lifting of heavy trays,
she said doubtfully, her orange eyes measuring Leia's slender form.
I understand, Leia assured her. Don't worry, I'm stronger than I look.
We will soon discover whether that is true,
the Kriya said.
There are cover gowns in that locker. Put one on and come to my office for an order pad.
Leia nodded.
Thank you.
On Alderaan, all the serving had been done by BD-3000 attendant droids. But Leia had been served often enough by living beings that she'd long since become used to the idea. Indeed, after the first few such experiences, she'd hardly even noticed the servers anymore unless there was a mistake or accident of some sort. She'd therefore managed to come away with the impression that such work was both simple and largely effortless. It took only a standard hour for her to lose the simple part of her preconceptions. Serving a table's worth of even these lower-tier Adarians was a subtle minefield of small intra-tier distinctions that required her to take their orders in the proper descending rank succession, and not simply by how they were arranged around the table. Since the protocol apparently was for the highest-ranked person to choose his or her preferred seat, followed by the others in their turn, there wasn't even a consistent pattern that repeated itself from group to group, and Leia collected several icy complaints before she figured that out. The Mungras were less socially rigid, but they presented their own unique set of challenges. It was almost a relief when, late in the afternoon, three humans wandered in. Or it would have been, if they hadn't been so obnoxiously falling down drunk already. The effortless part of the preconceptions took 3 standard hours to lose. It was just after midnight when she finally trudged up the stairway to the row of fourth-floor apartments the TAPCAF provided its employees. Chief Kyrie was waiting, dozing in a large armchair that would have comfortably accommodated an overweight Gamorrean.
"Ugh,"
he said, snapping awake and pulling himself upright as she closed the door behind her.
"I trust the evening's work went well?"
"It went reasonably well, yes," Leia confirmed, looking around as she took off her cover gown and hung it on the rack by the door. The apartment was small and cramped, no bigger than a ship's cabin, and only slightly better furnished. But it had a comfortable-looking bed, and that was all she really cared about right now. "The afternoon, on the other hand, was pretty much a disaster," she added. "How about your day?"
"Marginally productive," Chief Kyrie said. "The patrollers have begun searching all first and second tier hotels, aided by a contingent of Governor Chord's own palace soldiers. There is food in the locker if you're hungry."
"Thank you."
Crossing to the apartment's cooking corner, Leia opened the supply locker. There was some leftover Adarian cuisine in back, a selection of more human-palatable food in front.
"Sounds like they're getting serious," she said, as she pulled out a meal's worth of the latter and loaded it into the cooker.
"More serious than you realize,"
Chief Kyrie said soberly.
"I am told that a message about you has been sent to Imperial Center."
Leia grimaced.
She'd hoped that Chord would keep the search local for a while, in the hope of reaping whatever political prestige would come of personally turning her over to the Emperor. Apparently, he decided instead to let the Imperials do some of the heavy work.
"Any idea how soon they'll have a force here?"
"It may be here already,"
Chief Kyrie said.
"There are 2 army garrisons in Shelsha Sector, one of them only 6 hours flight time away. There is also a Star Destroyer on patrol that could be brought in."
"And probably will be," Leia said. "They'll need something with heavy firepower in orbit in case we make a run for it."
Chief Kyrie sighed deeply.
"Oh, I am sorry, Princess. I have failed you. I can see no way out for us."
"I've been in worse places,"
Leia assured him, fighting against the seductive pull of despair. The only thing at the end of that road was defeat.
"All we can do is hold on to freedom as long as we can, and watch for an opportunity. Don't forget, If Vokoli and Slani made it off Shelkanwa safely, they'll have gotten word to the Alliance leadership.
Which is too far away to reach us with aid before the Imperials arrive,
Chief Kairi pointed out. He took a look at Leia's face and grimaced.
My apologies,
he said, ducking his head.
I should not be speaking thus. I know the Alliance will do everything possible to rescue you.
Leia turned her face to the cooker, a memory flashing unexpectedly through her mind.
I'm Luke Skywalker,
the too short stormtrooper had said eagerly as he pulled off his helmet.
I'm here to rescue you.
He could have been beside her now, too, if she just kept her mouth shut at that meeting. So could Han, if he weren't so infuriatingly stiff-necked about politics. Instead, the two of them were flying madly around the sector, trying to figure out how to protect Alliance supply lines from pirates. A mission that was about to become totally irrelevant, she realized glumly. With Chief Kairi's imminent capture, and with Vokoli and Slani now known to Chord and his people, the rebel presence in Shelsha sector was as good as destroyed. Once it collapsed, there would be precious little need for supply lines. She shook her head sharply. That was despair talking again. What she needed right now was to put all such thoughts firmly away and to get herself some food and sleep. The physical inevitably colored the emotional, and she was as physically drained right now as she'd been in a long time. She was pulling her meal out of the cooker when through the half-open window she heard the faint sound of breaking glass. Chief Kairi was on his feet in an instant, a blaster in his hand.
Get down,
he whispered, as he moved cautiously toward the window. Leia ignored him, crossing instead to the door and flicking off the lights. In the sudden darkness, she dug her holdout blaster from her pocket and joined Chief Kairi at the window. There were fewer streetlights in this part of town than in the higher-tier areas, but there was enough light to see the two shadowy figures on the roof of the three-story building across the wide back alley, plus a third figure who was even now easing his way through one of the darkened third-floor windows.
Burglars,
Chief Kairi muttered, his voice edged with contempt.
You suppose anyone's home? Leia asked.
Unlikely,
Chief Kairi said.
Those will be the homes of the Playhouse employees on the next street over, and it does not close for another hour. Typical of coward.
Wait,
Leia said, straining her eyes. The window, two down from the one the burglar had entered. Had the curtains there just twitched? They twitched again, and then, to Leia's horror, they parted, and a small Adarian face peered anxiously out into the night. Stuffing her blaster back into her pocket, Leia pulled the window the rest of the way open.
What are you doing?
Chief Kairi demanded in a startled voice.
There's a child in there,
Leia told him, leaning out the window. Just below her was a narrow decorative ledge extending about 20 centimeters outward from the stone facing that ran the length of the building. Below that was a sheer drop to a ledge beneath the third-floor windows, another to the second-floor ledge, and another finally to the alley below. Above her, similar ledges marked the way up to the 10th-floor windows. The building's stone facing itself was old and crumbling, with plenty of gaps and grooves that an experienced climber with the right tools could probably make good use of. But Leia wasn't experienced. She had no climbing gear at all, and even if she had, that route wouldn't get her across the 20-meter gap to where she needed to be.
You must not interfere,
Chief Kairi said urgently, plucking at her sleeve.
If patrollers come...
I'm not abandoning that child, Leia cut him off. I've seen what burglars can do when they run into someone.
A meter to the left of her window, a thick plastic drain pipe ran from the roof edge rain catcher to the alley, fastened to the wall at every other floor by a flimsy-looking bracket. Leaning out onto the windowsill, she braced herself on the ledge and gave the pipe a shake. It jiggled in her grip, the brackets not quite flimsy enough for her to simply tear the pipe free by hand. The pipe itself, on the other hand, seemed quite sturdy, more than thick enough to support her weight.
shifting around onto her side, she drew her blaster again and lined it up with the topmost bracket.
"Princess, I implore you,"
Chivkairi said, all but begging now.
"If the patrollers come, we will be lost, and the intruders too may hear."
"I doubt anyone even notices blaster shots in this neighborhood," Leia said tartly. "Or cares." Holding her breath, sighting carefully along the barrel, she squeezed the trigger. The blaster bolt sounded twice as loud as usual in the relative stillness of the night, its echo from the surrounding buildings almost covering up the soft clatter as the pieces of the shattered bracket skittered across the window ledge. She shifted aim and shot off the next bracket, working her way down to the one on her own fourth floor level. She might not be a very good tap-cap server, she thought with a touch of dark satisfaction, but she could play sharpshooter games with the best of them. Chivkairi, she'd noticed out of the corner of her eye, had winced at each shot.
"Now what?"
he demanded, as silence again descended on the neighborhood. Leia frowned. That was, she realized suddenly, a very good question. Her plan had been to shoot off the brackets, push the pipe over from the connection joint just above the fourth floor ledge to land the end on the other rooftop, and then slide down it to where she could confront the burglars. But now it belatedly occurred to her that as she slid down the pipe, she would be presenting herself a perfect target to the two accomplices waiting on the other roof. And even if they didn't shoot her, then what? If she managed to rescue the child and chase them all away, how would she get back to her room again? Walk her way up the pipe like a daredevil stage performer? In her fatigue, she hadn't thought it through. Unfortunately, there was no time to think it through any further now. The child was still in danger, and getting over to the other building was still the only way to help. Leaning out the window again, she got a grip on the pipe.
"Wait,"
Chivkairi said, grabbing her leg.
"Look, they're leaving."
Sure enough, the burglar Leia had seen going into the window had now reappeared, climbing back up his ropes at breakneck speed. Above him, one of his two accomplices was helping to haul him up, while the other was frantically stuffing their gear into a dark shoulder sack.
"I guess they do notice shots here," Leia commented.
"Your shots will have alerted the entire neighborhood,"
Chivkairi said, sounding as if he wasn't sure whether to be pleased or worried.
"The intruders have been frightened away."
Leia looked back at the curtained window. Surely the burglar hadn't had time to hurt the youngster. And then the curtains parted, and the child's face once again peered nervously out. Leia exhaled in a relieved huff, then sent the child an encouraging smile, though she doubted the other would be able to read her expression in the dark. Looking back at the roof, she saw the trio of burglars jump the low parapet to the next building and race out of sight farther down the block.
"Please,"
Chivkairi said, tugging on her leg again.
"Before someone else sees you."
A moment later, Leia was back inside the room.
"It was a brave and honorable thing you did,"
he said as he closed the window behind her.
"We must hope it will not in turn bring destruction upon us."
"It might,"
Leia conceded, crossing the room and switching on the lights again.
"But it was something I had to do. The reason the Rebel Alliance exists is to free the galaxy from tyranny. The fear of the violent and the lawless is no less a tyranny than the edicts that come from the Emperor's throne."
Returning the blaster to her pocket, she turned back to the cooking corner.
"And meanwhile," she added, "even the Guardians of Freedom have to eat."
Rather to Leia's surprise, the patrollers didn't come that night. They didn't show up in the morning either, nor were they waiting for her when she reported to the TAPCAF just before midday for her shift. For the first couple of hours, she found her heart jumping every time the door opened, followed by an equally quick flash of relief when it turned out to be only another customer. It wasn't until the afternoon lull began to ramp up again toward the pre-dinner hour that she noticed the subtle change in the customer's attitude toward her. At first she thought they'd simply given up on her, that they decided there was no point in expecting her to get the nuances of their culture right, and thus no point in berating her, even politely, when she messed up. But while that might explain the regular's new courtesy, it didn't explain those who hadn't seen her in fumbling action the previous day. They were midway through the dinner rush when a large but quiet Adarian family arrived. A family that included the child whose face she'd seen across from her window the previous night. And then, finally, she understood. Chivkairi had been right. Her blaster fire had indeed woken up the entire neighborhood. But instead of reporting her to patrollers, they'd realized it had been an attempt to help, and a successful one at that. Apparently, their new tolerance for her failings was their way of thanking her. Leia returned to the apartment later, as weary in body as she'd been the night before. But this time, there was no despair to drag her still further down. Perhaps the people of Makran City weren't yet ready to take a stand against Imperial Center's tyranny. But they were getting closer. Whether this new determination and respect would survive when Imperial troops were marching through the streets, of course, was another question. One way or another, Leia would find out soon enough.
Chapter 19.
Coming up on Shokanwa, Quiller announced. Are our guests ready to take their leave of us?
As far as I know, Lerone said, gazing across the cockpit at Marcross's profile. Even in the flickering hyperspace glow, the tension lines in the other's cheeks and neck were clearly visible.
Grave and Brightwater are keeping an eye on them.
Marcross? The line shifted subtly, as if Marcross was coming back from some dark and distant place.
What?
He asked, half turning to face the other.
Just making sure you're all right, Lerone said. You've been a little odd ever since Gaparin.
I'm fine, Marcross said, turning back to face the canopy. I just want this over with.
Assuming we can find the Bloodscar's contact, Quiller commented. I know you think you got enough from that holonet log.
I got enough, Marcross cut him off.
Fine, Quiller said. I just meant that Shokan was a big planet, and...
I said I got enough.
Don't you think it's about time you shared that information with the rest of us?
Lerone suggested.
At least give us the contact number that was on the setup log, in case something happens to you, and we have to find a way to backtrack it.
The tension line shifted again.
You won't need to backtrack it, Marcross said. The traitor's at the palace.
Lerone stared.
The governor's palace?
That's the only palace down there.
I know, but...
But what? Marcross snapped. You don't think traitors come in all sizes and shapes and ranks? Just look at the three we have in the back of our own ship.
Here we go,
Quiller said, and pulled the hyperdrive levers. The stars reappeared. Quiller stiffened in his seat.
Oh, no,
he murmured.
No, no, no!
Steady, Lerone soothed, his own chest feeling a little tight as he gazed out at the huge command ship floating in high orbit over the planet. We've got our ID in place. We're all right.
The comm pinged.
Executor to incoming Swan Tech freighter,
a crisp voice said.
We're reading a military ID on you. Please confirm via clearance code.
Quiller,
Lerone prompted. There was no response. Quiller was still staring at the huge ship as if he were seeing a ghost.
I got it,
Marcross said, swiveling around and punching the code panel. For a moment, there was silence.
Code confirmed. Destination?
Makran City, Quiller said. Governor's Palace.
The palace landing area has been temporarily closed down. I can clear you to either Makran Main or Greencliff Regional. State your preference.
Why is the palace field closed?
Lerone asked, pulling up a map of the region. Makran Main was in the heart of the city's northwest quadrant, only a few kilometers from the governor's palace, while Greencliff Regional was a much smaller port tucked between the northeast part of the city and the line of cliffs running down the entire eastern edge.
There's a military search operation underway in the city. The palace field's been shut down for security reasons.
What are they searching for?
classified,
the other said, starting to sound annoyed.
State your landing preference.
Marcross looked back at Lerone, raising his eyebrows questioningly.
Makern Main's closer, he murmured.
But Greencliff will be less crowded,
Lerone murmured back. Marcross considered, then nodded.
We'll take Greencliff, he said aloud.
Acknowledged. You're cleared for Greencliff Regional.
Thank you.
Marcross shut down the comm.
Quiller, you all right?
Oh, sure. I'm fine,
Quiller said, his voice suddenly carrying a graveyard tone.
I don't suppose either of you happened to notice the name of that ship?
Marcross glanced a frown back at Lerone.
The Executor, Marcross said. Why?
I guess you ground thumpers don't need to keep up with fleet news.
Quiller took a careful breath.
The Executor just happens to be the brand new flagship of the Lord Darth Vader.
Lerone stared out at the ship, his stomach tightening.
Vader? What in the worlds is he doing here?
Had a guess? He's after either our traitor or Solo's rebel friend,
Quiller said tartly.
I guess she must be a little more important than we thought.
Though he did say they'd probably lock down the planet over her,
Lerone reminded him.
I thought he was exaggerating,
Quiller bit out.
I don't know about you two, but I don't want to be in the same city as Darth Vader. I don't want to even be in the same star system.
I don't blame you,
Marcross said, his voice sounding tight but determined.
If you want, you can just drop me at the spaceport.
What are you talking about?
Lerone asked, frowning.
I'm going after the traitor, Marcross said. The rest of you don't have to stay. In fact, Quiller's right. With Vader here, it'll be a lot safer for everyone if you don't.
Forget it, Lerone said. We're in this together.
You don't owe me anything, Marcross insisted.
We owe the people of Shelsha Sector,
Lerone countered.
Just because one Bloodscar base is gone doesn't mean the conspiracy is over. We need to pull this thing out by the root.
If Vader catches you, you'll wish ISB had found you first,
Marcross warned.
Just drop me and go.
Oh, thanks,
Quiller growled.
That makes me feel so much better.
Actually, Vader being here may work out to our advantage,
Lerone pointed out.
He almost certainly has his private stormtrooper legion on the ground conducting his search. We can just blend into the crowd.
Quiller turned a look of disbelief on him.
You're joking, right? Lerone, this isn't just some random stormtrooper unit you're talking about infiltrating. This is the 501st.
So?
Lerone countered, trying to suppress his own private misgivings.
The 501st puts their armor on one piece at a time, just like we do.
Quiller hissed between his teeth.
You're crazy. You know that, right?
There have been rumors,
Lerone conceded.
As long as we're all agreed,
Quiller said with a sigh.
Fine. If you and Marcross are going to be crazy, we might as well all be crazy together. Next point. What do we do about Solo and Luke and the Wookiee?
Good question, Marcross agreed. If Vader's looking for their friend, we really don't want them running around loose out there. Especially not with what they know about us.
And it's for fusted sure they're not going to blend in with the 501st,
Quiller added.
On the downside hand, I don't see an awful lot of other options. I doubt we're going to be able to keep them aboard. At least not without shooting them, which carries its own set of problems.
Chief of which would be where exactly you shoot a Wookiee to be sure of bringing him down,
Lerone said, an odd thought suddenly striking him.
All right, try this. What if instead of letting them run free, we give them an escort?
The suggestion brought the exact reaction Lerone had expected it would. Both Quiller's and Marcross's mouths dropped open. Marcross found his voice first.
Quiller was right, he said. You are crazy.
Very likely, Lerone said. But questions of mental health aside, why not? They'd be in the company of legitimate stormtroopers, thereby putting them above suspicion or interrogation by any of the local patrollers. And if we run into flak from Vader's troops, we claim they're our informants.
or prisoners were taken to interrogation, Quiller suggested.
That works too. Lerone hesitated. And if worse comes to worst, when we get caught in a gun battle, well, I doubt there'd be anything left for Vader to interrogate.
Are you saying we'd shoot them? Marcross asked flatly.
The ghost of Teardrop flickered in front of Lerone's eyes.
Not us, he said firmly. Against the 501st, I doubt we'd have to.
Quiller shook his head.
They'll never go for it, you know.
Who won't go for it? Lerone asked. Solo and Luke, or Grave and Brightwater?
None of them will.
Lerone shrugged. Well, we have until we land before we have to make any decisions, he said. Maybe we'll come up with something better.
The chiming of the ship's proximity alarm, as Mara had prearranged, brought her out of the dreamless sleep of her force healing trance. She had arrived at Shel Kanwa. For a moment she lay quietly on the ship's fold-down cot, taking quick inventory. She was hungry and thirsty, a typical side effect of healing trances, but the burns and scrapes she'd received at the Blood Scar's base were completely gone. She headed to the cockpit, snaring a couple of ration bars and a water bottle from the galley locker on the way. She had finished the first bar when the computer prompt pinged, and as she pulled the hyperdrive levers, the hazy disk of Shelsha Sector's capital world appeared in front of her against the starry blackness. And floating in space between her and the planet was possibly the last thing in the universe she'd expected to see. Her comm crackled.
Incoming Z-10 Seeker. This is the Imperial Command Ship Executor. State your ID number and your business on Shel Kanwa.
Mara felt her teeth grinding together as she keyed for transmission. What in the stinking fumes of Imperial Center garbage was Vader doing here?
Executor, this is Z-10 Seeker. ID number unknown, she bit out. Is Lord Vader aboard?
There was a moment of silence as the comm operator tried to reset his brain to deal with his thoroughly non-standard reply.
Is he there or isn't he?
Mara demanded.
Yes, Lord Vader's aboard,
the operator said, starting to sound flustered.
Admiral Bentro is in command.
Inform Lord Vader that the Emperor's Hand wishes to speak with him.
Mara cut him off.
Who?
Lord Vader, Mara snarled. Now!
There was no answer. Biting back a curse, Mara turned her ship's nose toward the Superstar Destroyer and cut in the drive. The Sith Lord was probably hiding in his personal chamber, or else pacing the command walkway in one of those moods where no one dared to approach him. But Mara had a job to do. One way or another, he was going to see her. She was nearly to the ship's inner defense zone, and the Executor's layered arrays of point defenses were swiveling warningly toward her when the comm finally came to life.
Emperor's Hand,
Vader's familiar voice rumbled.
This is an unexpected pleasure.
Likewise,
Mara said, knowing that neither of them meant a word of it.
Lord Vader, we need to talk.
As you wish. Come aboard.
The Executor's first officer took over, deactivating the ship's defenses and directing Mara to the captain's personal hangar bay. An escort from Vader's own elite 501st Stormtrooper Legion was waiting, and after a short walk, they arrived at a small conference room. Vader was waiting, standing like a brooding storm cloud near the head of the table.
I understand you demanded to see me,
he said without preamble.
I apologize for my earlier tone, Mara said, inclining her head toward him in a gesture of humility.
There is only one person in the Empire who can demand my presence,
Vader continued, his voice stiff. Apparently, he wasn't in the mood to accept apologies.
That person is not you, and never will be.
Then let me make this as brief as possible, Mara said.
She wasn't exactly in the best of moods herself.
I'm here on an important mission, and I need some assurance your presence here isn't going to get in the way.
That my presence won't get in your way?
Vader demanded, his voice dropping half an octave.
Walk softly, Emperor's Hand.
I don't walk softly where treason is involved, Mara countered. I'm on the trail.
No!
Vader boomed, his voice slamming across the room and straight through Mara's skull. He took a long step around the end of the table toward her, his black cloak billowing, his gloved hand dropping to his lightsaber.
She's the key to finding him. She is mine.
What?
Mara managed, her own simmering anger vanishing in the realization that she was suddenly in big trouble.
No, I...
But it was too late. Vader pulled the lightsaber from his belt, and with a snap hiss, the blazing red blade appeared. Holding the weapon in attack position, he strode toward her. Mara took a step backward, snatching out her own lightsaber, but leaving it closed down. The last thing she wanted to do was try to match blades with a Sith Lord. She threw a quick look at the door, shifting her weight in preparation for a dash for freedom. But Vader either spotted the glance or read her body language. Shifting direction, he angled toward the door, blocking any chance of escape. Grimacing, Mara shifted her weight in the other direction and threw herself sideways onto the conference table. A quick kick and roll off her left shoulder, and she had landed in a crouch on the floor on the far side.
Take it easy, she called as soothingly as she could. What's Governor Chord to you anyway?
Raising his lightsaber high, Vader slashed the blade straight through the table. Mara took a quick step back as the two sections of the bisected table crashed to the floor. With the wall at her back and Vader between her and the door, there was only one option left.
You want trouble?
She demanded, finally igniting her lightsaber and lifting it to blocking position in front of her.
Fine. Come and get it.
Vader's only reply was to shift his own weapon again into attack position as he stepped into the gap between the two sections of table. Stretching out to the Force, Mara reached to the wall behind him and switched off the lights. It was a trick she would never have tried with a normal opponent. Their two lightsabers didn't give off a lot of light, but there was more than enough for biological eyes to work with while they adjusted to the gloom. But Vader's helmet was equipped with optical sensors for use in dim light. With all the strengths and weaknesses inherent in such equipment, there was a chance that for the first crucial second before the contrast adjusted itself, all he would see was her glowing lightsaber blade floating in a field of otherwise total darkness. She was right. With a bellow, the Sith Lord angled his lightsaber and slashed it viciously in a horizontal arc through the air, half a meter below the glowing magenta blade. Only Mara wasn't there anymore. Using the Force to hold her lightsaber floating in place, she had dropped to the floor the instant the lights went out and rolled out of sight beneath one of the angled sections of the broken table. Vader stopped in his tracks, and for a long moment, the room was silent, except for the hum of the lightsabers. Mara listened carefully, but the steadiness of the sound indicated that he was holding the weapon motionless. Was he finally coming to his senses? And then, to her relief, she heard the familiar sizzle as he closed down the weapon. A moment later, the room's lights came back on.
What were you saying about Governor Chord?
Vader asked, his voice calm again. Cautiously, Mara emerged from cover, alert for any last-minute tricks. But Vader had taken a step back from the table, and his lightsaber was again hooked onto his belt. The brief madness was over.
Chord has been recruiting pirate gangs to attack military shipments,
she said, calling her own lightsaber back to her hand and closing it down.
A few days ago, he sent the Reprisal to destroy their base and cover his tracks. They also nearly killed me in the process.
That would have been unfortunate,
Vader said. Mara could hear no actual sarcasm in his voice, but
but she had no doubt it was there.
Still, your information matches my own.
Mara stared at him.
You mean you already knew?
The knowledge is recent, but it is of no interest to me. As he denounced his governor, Chief Administrator Disra also claimed that Leia Organa is in Macron City. That is who I seek tonight.
Really?
Mara said, the word obsession flashing through her mind as she finally understood the Dark Lord's earlier outburst. She might have guessed it would have had something to do with the former Alderaanian princess and the rebellion.
What's she doing here?
Disra claimed she was consulting with local rebel leaders. He assures me he can supply names.
Handy. Do we know where this Disra is right now?
He has gone to the palace to collect surveillance records that might be of use in our search.
Or perhaps he was there to destroy other, more incriminating records. I need to get down there right away.
Is someone stopping you?
Mara felt her lip twist. Even when Vader wasn't being homicidal, he was never pleasant to deal with.
Not at all, she said. Enjoy your hunt.
Nodding to him, she headed for the door.
Emperor's hand.
She turned back, finding his black faceplate turned toward her.
Yes,
she said.
As you dispense your justice to Governor Chord,
he said softly,
take care not to get in my way.
The sky had darkened into the hazy, starless gray typical of large cities, and Leia had just taken an order for a group of Mungras when Chivkairi arrived at the kitchen's back door with the bad news.
It has begun,
he told her, his voice trembling.
Imperial stormtroopers have arrived at the spaceport and are spreading throughout the city.
Leia took a careful breath. So Imperial Center's response had come at last.
I understand, she said.
No, I don't think you do,
Chivkairi said urgently, glancing furtively both ways down the alley.
It is reported that Darth Vader himself is among them.
That part wasn't exactly unexpected either, Leia reflected. Vader had always been the type to take things personally, and her role in the Death Star's destruction was about as personal as one could get. Even so, his name sent a shiver through her.
I understand, she said again. Thank you for the warning. We'd better get moving.
What is the point?
Chivkairi said wearily.
No one escapes Lord Vader.
Of course they do, Leia said firmly. I suggest you try the catacombs. The local patrollers have probably searched them by now, which means they're not very likely to do so again.
Chivkairi snorted.
The stormtroopers will not care what the patrollers have or have not done.
But the stormtroopers aren't looking for you,
Leia reminded him.
I doubt their orders mention anyone but me. Anyway, you have to try something.
You are right,
Chivkairi said.
Forgive my moment of despair.
Everyone has such moments,
Leia said, her cheeks warming as she thought back on her own latest battles with that emotion.
The trick is to make sure they stay moments and not lengthen into hours or days.
Or a lifetime,
Chivkairi said.
We'll win,
Leia said quietly.
Someday, I know we will.
She leaned out the door, checking the alley.
Still empty. Now get going. And again, thank you for everything.
For a moment, the Adarian studied her eyes and face, as if committing them to a final memory. Then, bowing his head, he hurried away.
Do you need also to leave?
Leia turned. Vikria, the Tapcalf's manager, was standing beside one of the storage lockers, her orange eyes looking even brighter than usual in the dim light.
Not yet,
Leia said.
Because you may go whenever you must. You don't belong here. I and all those who have seen you these past days know that.
Leia swallowed. Then more than ever, I'm grateful for your discretion.
Vikria shook her head in a Mungrin shrug, the movement sending a soft, fluid ripple through her mane.
Many have come to this neighborhood over the years to hide. The most have been arrogant or hateful or bitter. Few have shown us such honor and courtesy as you have.
She moved to Leia's side, stepping into the doorway Chief Kairi had just vacated and looking up toward the boarded-up third-floor window across the alley.
We have been repaid in full for our discretion. You are welcome among us any time, Leia Organa.
Leia felt her throat tighten, so they even knew who she was.
You are a people of great honor, Vikria. I will do what I can to see that no retribution comes upon you and the neighborhood for your kindness.
Do not sacrifice yourself for us,
Vikria warned, her tone turning gruff.
You are of far higher tier than we.
I will be certain not to carelessly throw away the gift you have given me,
Leia assured her.
But as to our respective tiers, I do not consider them a proper measure of our value as living, thinking beings. They are certainly not an indicator of loyalty or courage.
A strange way of thinking. But you are an outworlder. Your thoughts and ideas are not those of the Edarian or Mungrin peoples.
Perhaps not,
Leia said.
But I have found that the yearning for freedom crosses all such lines and barriers. Not only those between different peoples, but also those between different tiers.
A strange way of thinking. Yet you are correct. Foreign soldiers searching the streets. Perhaps it would be best for you to stay inside.
Hiding in plain sight, as my friend first proposed,
Leia agreed. The conversation about society and tears had apparently turned uncomfortable enough for Vikria to change the subject. But Leia had planted the seeds. Maybe something would eventually grow from them.
Besides, I couldn't leave yet anyway.
Why not?
Leia held up her pad.
I still have two orders to put in.
Deesra took the last 20 meters to his office in a dead run, slamming open the door and diving for the secure comm.
Deesra here! He panted into the microphone. Caldra?
Finally,
Caldra said tightly.
Where have you been? Never mind that. What the blazes are all these Imperials doing here?
Nothing to do with us, Deesra assured him. They're looking for a rebel leader who was supposedly spotted in Makran City a few days ago.
Is that gonna be a problem?
No, of course not, Deesra said, thinking fast.
After the broken holonet call from the Commodore and Deesra's subsequent failure to raise the Bloodscar base again, he'd assumed Caldra had been killed. Apparently, the man had once again cheated death, which brought up some interesting possibilities.
Deesra had all he really needed already, but Caldra's presence might add a nice extra touch, if he could lure him down.
You're on your way in, I assume?
I'm on my way to the Greencliff Regional Spaceport. The idiot directing traffic from the Executor told me no one was allowed to land at the palace.
You didn't ask for Makran Main?
That's where he wanted to send me. I talked him out of it.
Deesra frowned.
What on Imperial Center 4? Main's both closer and bigger.
It's also crawling with Imperials. Considering my cargo consists of 50 AT-STs, I don't think either of us wants me anywhere near the place.
Deesra felt his mouth drop open.
50 what?
Remember I said the Bloodscars lost my special cargo?
Caldra reminded him, sounding grimly pleased with himself.
I got it back.
And you brought it here?
The Executor didn't offer me the option of turning around and running,
Caldra said acidly.
50 stolen ATSTs. This just got better and better.
Forget the Imperials and Greencliff, Deesra told him. I'll call the Executor and get you routed directly here to the palace.
I already told you. The controller said I couldn't land there.
Because Governor Chord closed off the grounds, Deesra countered. But what the Governor has taken away, he can give back again. Go ahead and change your landing vector. I'll get it fixed.
The comm went silent. Deesra slumped back in his chair, wincing as his freshly sweaty back pressed against the cool cloth of his shirt.
50 ATSTs.
No wonder Caldra had been so upset when they vanished. With those, plus the blood scars and their allied gangs, they might actually have been able to pull off their grand conspiracy. Or they could have, if Deesra had ever really intended to go through with it. But even though the whole charade was very close to being over, it wasn't there quite yet. Keying the comm again, he signaled for the Executor.
Mara was still fuming when, far ahead, she noticed one of the ships heading to the planet below begin to drift out of line. She frowned, leaning forward as she studied the freighter's new vector. Some kind of malfunction?
Her sensors weren't showing any problem, but the equipment on this ship was hardly up to the standard she was accustomed to. Perhaps the other pilot had developed a problem with his attitude system, especially now that they were getting into atmosphere. The distant craft rolled slightly, its aspect shifting toward her.
Mara caught her breath. For a moment she stared, then jabbed at her board, keen for her best magnification.
The ship's best wasn't particularly good, but it was good enough. The drifting freighter was the Happer's way. She slapped the comm switch.
Executor, I have a ship breaking approach pattern. Please advise as to its intentions.
Imperial military rigidity being what it was, she fully expected to have to fight uphill to actually get any information. But the controller apparently hadn't forgotten the young woman who had successfully petitioned to speak to Vader, and, more important, had been allowed to walk away from the meeting.
The freighter Happer's Way has been newly authorized to land at the Governor's Palace.
The Governor's Palace? She should have known.
I thought you said no one was being allowed in there.
Apparently it's been granted an exception.
Mara nodded to herself as she watched the freighter drop ever farther off the Greencliff approach vector. So that was the game. The Governor would open his grounds to Caldra, who would then sneak his stolen ATSTs to safety right past the Imperial's collective nose.
Order it off,
she said.
Excuse me?
The controller asked, sounding startled.
I said, order it off!
Mara repeated.
It was cleared to Greencliff, and that's where it's going to land.
But the Governor's office has authorized it to land on his grounds.
Irrelevant! The Governor's office has jurisdiction over the palace and palace grounds, but the freighter is still in open atmosphere.
She hesitated, but this was no time for half measures.
Tell him that if he doesn't get back on the Greencliff vector, you'll shoot him down.
There was a pause, and Mara heard the subtle click of a comm switchover.
Emperor's hand, this is Admiral Bentro,
a new and calmer voice said.
I can't threaten a civilian freighter without a reason, especially not one under the protection of a sector governor.
I'm giving you an order, Captain. The recognition code is Hapspear Barini Corbolan Triaxis.
There was another brief pause.
Understood. But if I could just contact Lord Vader first for
You don't need Lord Vader's permission. Besides, we don't have time. Deliver the message, Admiral.
There was a soft hissing of exhaled breath.
Acknowledged. Commander, order the Happersway to return to its original course and landing destination.
Thank you, Admiral. Don't worry, the pilot won't risk getting himself shot down. He's far too confident that he can slip out of any net we can weave.
Understood. Do you want me to order troops or air support to the Greencliff Field?
Mara hesitated. All the Imperial forces down there were under Vader's direct command, and she had no intention of crowding him twice in one day. No, I'll handle it, she told Bentro. Thank you for your assist.
My pleasure. Our sensors indicate the Happer's Way is returning to its designated course.
I see. I'll contact you again if I need further assistance.
Yes, ma'am,
Bentro said, and there was no mistaking the quiet relief in his voice. If Mara didn't want to push Vader, a mere fleet admiral certainly didn't. The comm clicked off. Keeping a wary eye on the Happer's Way, Mara keyed her ship for landing sequence. Given the current distance between them, Caldra would have about 10 minutes on the ground before Mara caught up with him. For a moment, she considered leaving her place in line and moving up so that she would be right on top of him when he landed. But if he hadn't already spotted her back here, that would tip him off for sure. Better to let him have his 10 minutes to prepare for whoever or whatever had just kicked him away from the safety of the palace. She was looking forward to seeing what he came up with.
Chapter 20.